We're very happy to welcome Beverly Wright, who's been a stalwart of the civil rights movement, of the black liberation movement, of the environmental justice movement, of the historically black colleges and university movement, the women's movement in the South. Wherever there's a fight, you can figure Beverly Wright will be there. Beverly, it's very nice to have you with Manuel Coelho and myself on Voices from the Frontlines.
Thanks for having me, Eric. It's very nice to have this opportunity to share some of my thoughts with your public.
Why don't we start with the things you were talking about yesterday I thought was very profound about this whole question of black removal and the demand to rebuild New Orleans as a black city.
Yes. I think that right now, as you have already said, we're finding ourselves in a real dilemma. Our elected officials are literally in exile, and all kinds of decisions are being made about the rebuilding of New Orleans, with not only not including the citizenry, but not also not included our elected officials. And it really is a disheartening thing to sit in a meeting at the state capitol and listen to how disrespected and disenfranchised our political leaders are. Right now, you know, we're talking about, well, there is another hurricane out in the Gulf which may stop everything from moving forward. But what we were seeing was a rapid repopulation of the outlying parishes, which are predominantly white, and a repopulation of uptown, which is predominantly white, at least where there was no water. And there was one area called Treme, where Louis Armstrong lived, that didn't get much water, and they were asking people to come back. The question was, at that point, how will they get back, people who lived in Treme? They all took planes and buses out to God knows where, as far as Utah. So for the mayor to say, come back, what does that mean exactly? Will we be sending bus tickets or plane fares to get people back into the city? And that is the question. It's one thing to have a right to return, but then how do you return? I watched a woman in Utah saying, this will never be my home. I mean, Utah has like 1% black population.
Right.
The one white person there was very happy, but you could see how saddened she was.
Right.
And so that is the question. How do we get our people back? And we have a number of things planned to try to engage our people in this conversation. Eric, I just want to say this. There is an election that is coming up very soon. For our mayor, to reelect the mayor that we have, or to get a new mayor. How are we going to do that? Who represents the legitimate public? You know, these are very difficult and complicated questions that have to be answered. You know, what kinds of rules and regulations or the Constitution for the state will have to be changed in order for us to do something different that will allow us to include our people. This is a struggle for the heart and soul of the city of New Orleans, and the vultures are lining up to buy every piece of property that people will be unable to maintain because they don't have proper insurance.
Well, Beverly, stay there for a minute. Let's go back to the issue of the election.
Yes.
I think that's great. I mean, it's a very new, you know, and also, as you say, the right to return, but what's an effective right to return?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're going to have on later is Curtis from the, Malcolm Suber. We've had Curtis Muhammad already.
Yes.
From COU.
Uh-huh.
What are the demands? I mean, what are even the difficulty of the movement finding each other?
Yes.
What are the difficulties of movement groups just finding each other to be able to have a coherent plan? And is there anything, is the plan of postponing the election under the natural disaster, is that that's a great idea, but the question is, does it have any traction right now?
There's lots of traction from those of us who are on the ground.
Right.
To stop any election, but whether or not, you know, we can get anything done at the state level is the question. I think that everything is a possibility if there is strong enough support for it. If our leaders see that we are lining up and showing up and marching at the state capitol, as whites have done, for example, from St. Bernard Parish. I was at the capitol. There must have been 2,000 of them at the state capitol. How do we get 2,000 of our people? you know, to the state capitol to support what we're doing. We only had maybe 100 people at our meeting. The rest of our people were in shelters or trying to find, you know, some place to stay. But this is a critical question. We are trying to find one another. In fact, I want to say on Radio MT, I'm looking for you. Please call. I don't know, you know, I feel like doing a shout-out for all of the people that I've been working with and we've lost contact with one another. If, in fact, it is this difficult for me to find the people that I have worked with for years on all kinds of issues in, within the city, how difficult is it going to be to find the rest of our citizenry? The post office found me through FEMA, so there is a possibility of a tracking system, but with all of the privacy acts, then how do we reach these people? You know, I was really startled to get mail from the post office, you know, at Dr. Bullard's house, where he's putting my family up during this struggle. And I found out that they found me through FEMA. So there are records of where everybody went, if in fact they applied for some benefits or received benefits. How do we get access to those kinds, that kind of information, to come up with some kind of organized means of reaching people? There is, and I think that we're going to have a lot of things happening in different places, and we need a space that we can all come together and try to organize all of the efforts that will be afoot. For instance, the Bayou Classic, which is a huge event for people from Louisiana, won't be. It's a football game between Southern University and Grambling State University.
Right.
That brings over 100,000 people to the city of New Orleans. Now it's being moved to Houston, Texas. That would be a real opportunity for us to make contact with a lot of people in that particular football game, cross class lines. We were all black, but it was from the lower economic strata to the wealthiest of us, and it still has that kind of appeal. Looking for those kinds of venues to reach people, to get a large database going, to identify community leaders from all of the different communities that are represented in the city, and trying to support them to make contact with their neighbors would be one way that we could do this. And
Beverly, let me hold you there for a minute.
Okay,
doing good. One of the things that we're going to be doing in Los Angeles and proposing in this article I'm working on, which is actually building off, of course, the point you just raised,
mm-hmm.
is the idea to do a people's relocation plan. So that is to say, we in Los Angeles, what can we really do? One thing we can do is try to locate all the evacuees that have come to Los Angeles, to try to go to the social service agency, to flyer on the bus, and to simply say, if you know somebody in Los Angeles who's been evacuated from New Orleans, who would like the right to return, who would like to figure out how to find their property, we can't do it for you, but we can get your name, address, phone number, email if we can, and submit it to groups in New Orleans.
Yes.
If we had groups in Houston doing that, if we had groups in Utah doing that, you know, I'm afraid that at least could be one thing to do, is to try to find out where have been the people dispersed to and how we can help them. Why don't you tell us an important thing you've been, because you've talked a lot about the multi-class nature of the black liberation struggle, and of course we understand that the black community is primarily a working class community, but it has a multifaceted, it still has farmers, it certainly has college professors, it has property owners. What's it like if you owned land in New Orleans, if you had a house without insurance, if you had a house with a deed? What is even the process right now of people recovering their legal documents to prove property ownership?
Yeah. Well, this is a personal dilemma for me because I lost my mother in April, and her will is floating around in the house. And we're looking for all kinds of, and we own property. So how do we go about getting another, a death certificate with everything closed down, you know, to finalize things? But I just want to say, first of all, that African Americans have been in the city of New Orleans for a long time. And maybe, uncommon to other cities, and maybe there are other cities like New Orleans, but I think it's kind of uncommon that we actually have people who have never left, generations who have stayed in this city for nearly 100 years. Their families are still there. We also live together, you know, grandmothers, aunts, and uncles. That's how we made it. We were poor people, but poor people with dignity. And those of us who had a little were absolutely connected to and related to the poor people of New Orleans. And this hasn't been said, but I need to say this, and I'll get back to your question. And what we also need to recognize is that the heart and soul of the city was in the grassroots, in those communities. They were the practitioners of the culture, where they would start the year ahead beating costumes for Mardi Gras. All of that will be gone. There will be no more music throughout downtown New Orleans with young men walking from Treme to the French Quarters playing music as they went along. All of that would, in fact, be lost. The middle class in the city of New Orleans has had a long, hard struggle, but it was one that we were determined to make good of. That was buying land, building houses, and holding on to the land that our parents and grandparents had bought in the old ward, this ninth ward, the sixth ward, the seventh ward, all of those wards where black people own property. One of the problems is that a lot of the property in the old wards are dilapidated and old. My mother's property, for example, the land had to be torn down, our first house, because of the drugs and the violence, and we couldn't get insurance. But that land still belongs to us. How do we lay claim to that land? How do we encourage people not to sell? And what do people do who have very large mortgages, whose houses are going to be completely demolished? Where do you get the money to rebuild if the insurance money goes to pay off that mortgage? We're all very confused about how we're going to do this. So the city of New Orleans is going to take a big hit in terms of I'd say the core of the city has been rocked, because the lower Ninth Ward, which is made up of mostly African Americans, poor but homeowners and voters. The Ninth Ward, the New Orleans East, where I live, made up of mostly black but homeowners, professionals, and voters. Those are the two areas of the city that have been completely wiped out. And without that core to support, you know, our poor relatives, friends, and neighbors, then I think the developers can win unless we come up with a better strategy.
Well, one thing is that we're going to do, Beverly, because we're going to move on in a couple of minutes, is we want you as one of the, you know, you're very articulate, and the things you're saying is very important about if the professional classes and if those who own property, and unlike in Los Angeles, we're sad to say, still care about the poor and have created a base to help the poor, then the wiping out of those with the resources inside the black community is an attack on the entire community.
Absolutely.
You have 2 minutes. What is the last thought you'd like to leave our audience with? And we'll be getting back to you on future shows, promise.
Okay. Well, I think the last thought to me is just how racism in the long run hurts everyone. And the devastation that we're looking at in the city of New Orleans has everything to do with privilege, and how the privilege have always managed to garner more of the services that the state has to offer. And so in the more privileged areas, we have not just higher land, but stronger levies. And we watched in another area of the city, which is mostly made up of wealthy whites, a new levy, I mean the efforts to get this new levy in place to protect that area, the 17th Street levy. You know, we watched them finish it just before the hurricane season, and everybody's feeling that they are safe. But nobody was really looking out for the little people or people of color. I'm not people of color, African Americans in the city of New Orleans, because that's who we are for the most part. And so although we've struggled real hard, we've always had to carve out our own space because we weren't allowed to build in areas where white people were because of segregation. So we carved out our own space. We were doing very well. And because, you know, of racism, all of the resources went towards the wealthy. And in the end, we're all losing because the levees couldn't hold even where wealthy people lived because of the strain of the pressure of the water in areas where they did not protect people. So had everyone been protected, we'd all be safe. But
that's
because they chose
point.
To just protect some, driven by racism, we've lost our city to this flood.
Thank Beverly, thank you. Know you're really great to have on the show. Very
well,
moving.
Thank you, Eric.
And you know we'll be in touch both personally and on the show again, and it's an honor to have you on the show, Beverly.
Thank you, and thank you for listening to us and exposing us to your audience.
Take good care. We'll see you again.
Okay. Bye-bye.